Hello and welcome to everyone. Welcome to Consumer Choice Radio, broadcasting on the Big Talker FM, 106.7 FM here in the morning. It is Saturday, the 8th of February in the year 2020. I am one of your co-hosts, Yael Ososki, broadcasting to you from Washington, D.C., and I'm joined on the line by my very astute co-host, Mr. David Clement, coming out of Toronto, Ontario. David, how goes it?
It's good. Minus this cold I got kicking in, things are going pretty well. Excited for another week.
I think I coughed into the mic last week and you caught it, so I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, transmission via radio show.
I really apologize. But to those of you listening, if this is your first time or if this is your fifth time or sixth time listening to us, you can find all of our details at consumerchoiceradio.com. You can subscribe to our podcast version that we go out. We are live on the radio right now out of Wilmington, North Carolina on the Big Talker FM. We've got some great clips, some great convo, great analysis. It was an action-packed week. But if you want to kind of follow up on the other stuff we've been talking about, in weeks past, go ahead and go to our website, check that out. So much more to look at. And David, we've got an amazing show. And I have to admit, it has to have been the ultimate consumer entertainment week. I mean, this week was jam-packed from beginning until the end.
Yeah, from start to finish, starting with the Super Bowl, ending with the State of the Union, it has been...
Oh, that's you're even forgetting impeachment acquittal.
Oh, yeah.
You got people reacting to that. You've got Trump on the victory tour. It's been insane. So let's go through for the listeners. We put together a couple clips. We've got some interesting things to look at. So Super Bowl, I guess, would, if we're going to go chronologically, let's go through this. So Super Bowl, I didn't watch the thing. Think I was in transit at the time coming back from Spain. I know it was the Chiefs and we had the 49ers.
Yes.
That's about it. Now, David, please set the stage for me. You know way more about this.
Yeah. So it was the Chiefs versus the San Francisco 49ers. The Chiefs hadn't won a Super Bowl in, I think, 50 years. So quite a long time. It was relatively close. Actually, it was close up until halftime. The 49ers took a 10-point lead in the third quarter, and Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback for Kansas City, basically roared back with 21 points in the fourth quarter to win the Super Bowl. So for those who love kind of fairy tale Disney endings, this was quite the game. Quite the game for the Chiefs, but I think the real exciting part for any consumer out there is the commercials. I always love seeing what different marketing and ad agencies have come up with, the emergence of something that I think is relatively new, the co-branded ad.
Oh, I get it. So you have different brands, you have different companies that are featured in the same ad.
Yes. Often owned by the same company, but not necessarily tied together. I think the most interesting one was Budweiser beer and Tide, not related in any corporate way that I know of. Just an interesting marriage in terms of how to best maximize those ad dollars and how to reach consumers.
So I did not watch the Super Bowl, but I did catch up on all the ads. So David, thanks for sending a couple links. And I did see, you know, a lot of the Twitter sphere was much ablaze with many of the great ads. So let's go through a couple. I actually have a few clips. One of them that apparently a lot of people are talking about was exclusive to Canada. So you probably saw this. Were you actually watching?
Yes, I did.
Were you watching I guess you were watching it on the Canadian channel, not on the American channel.
I actually got I was watching it on the American channel because I ended up being in Nashville for the game. But I did see this Canadian-specific ad, and I knew that it was coming. And it is quite a doozy. It's
all
actually
right.
One
so
of
this
my
is, let's set the stage. This is Budweiser. This is a Budweiser ad in promo, I guess, with Uber?
Correct, yes.
And to kind of set the stage, this basically starts off in a guy's apartment. And it looks like my nightmare scenario, by the way. A million talking tubes and, these Amazon Alexas and all these things going off and talking to each other. And then the guy enters the apartment.
So, not much. Wishing I was watching the game, having a Bud. What's up with you? Like you, wishing I was watching the game, having a bud.
True. True.
What's up?
What's up?
What's up?
What's up?
Yo, where's D-Unit?
What's up?
What's up?
So now you have all the smart devices going off, saying what's up to what each other.
It's a smart world. Don't be stupid about how you get around tonight. Use Uber promo code WhatsUp to help get home after the game. Must be legal drinking age.
That was close.
True. True.
Okay, so this is a Budweiser ad partnering with Uber.
Yep.
Responsibility, alcohol, and all the talking tubes and technology and AI devices around us.
And what I love is they're bringing back the old Budweiser commercial of the Wazza.
Yeah,
which,
big throwback.
If you're an older millennial, you remember that because you'd basically be at school for the next 2 weeks, and every time you'd give another kid at the in the playground the nod, and you'd be like, "Wazza,
wazza." Yeah, very good, very good, and
yeah, pretty good, pretty good.
I know there's. I don't. How much are the ads costing? Is it $5 million for the 30 seconds?
It's around that. Yeah, so it's around that. That's how much they cost. I know the U.S. feed. I'm not sure what the Canadian numbers are, but it is a pretty penny.
Oh, okay. Do you think Consumer Choice Center, we can pony up and get our own 30-second ad? Probably not.
That'd be great.
That
would be great. And the best part, the best part is that Budweiser Uber ad makes the point that we make all the time, which is that people use these ride-sharing services to avoid the stupid decision of drinking and driving.
Exactly.
And obviously, that makes everybody better off and safer. So,
since we're on the Bud theme, there was another Bud commercial. I don't know if you saw this one. This is Bud Light Seltzer.
Yes, I did.
So this is Post Malone. I hope that we can translate this in audio. Let's listen in on this one.
Yeah.
So this is Post Malone.
So you got Bud Light.
Entering the store, there. Looking for Bud Light.
Bud Light made a seltzer?
Now we're inside
Bud Light
his head.
Seltzer?
I wonder what it tastes like.
Only one way to find out. What are the taste buds saying?
Tastes great. No Bud Light, just hard seltzer with a hint of fruit flavor.
Light and refreshing. It says light and refreshing.
Let's get that instead.
Wait. Post Malone doesn't drink seltzer. We drink Bud Light. Everybody knows that.
Why not try something new?
Bud Light.
Seltzer.
Bud Light.
Seltzer.
Bud Light.
Season one was much better than season two.
I love that.
Guys, we're incredibly rich. Let's get both.
We're incredibly rich.
I'll get both.
Got any pretzels?
Got any pretzels?
Bud Light Seltzer, unquestionably good.
Now, I like this ad for many reasons. One, I think this the guys who are talking in front of the store, they're just like, season one was way better than season two. That's like every conversation ever now. I love that. But also, the seltzer meme is caught on. This is mainstream now. I mean, we've talked about this a lot, David, these seltzer drinks. I'm a huge fan. For anyone who actually cannot have normal beer, this stuff is good because, if the normal beer has gluten. So this is actually a big favorite for people. And it tastes delicious.
It does taste delicious. And the funny thing is do you know why seltzer exists? Hard seltzer exists?
Ooh, hit me.
Because of weird tax policy. So traditionally, these drinks are actually vodka infused with carbonated water or something along those lines.
Yeah.
But spirits are taxed at a higher rate than fermented alcohol like beer or even wine. And so seltzer exists and in many cases is competitive on the pricing structure because it avoids the taxes of spirits.
Mm.
And so that tax disparity is part of the reason why, besides the fact that they taste delicious, is part of the reason why you have like this White Claw mania, you have Truly's, now Bud Light is getting into the game. I think Natty Light is getting into the seltzer game now too.
Yeah.
So it looks like everyone is hopping on board, which is quite interesting. But
it's a great trend. And from what I understand and I think your tax point, that's obviously great. That makes sense. From what I heard, what they're able to do is somehow break down the sugar and get some kind of alcohol from that. Look, I'm not a scientist. I'm just a consumer, and I love the stuff. I think it's great. It's hydrating you at the same time you're intoxicating yourself. Yes. Again, this sounds like just a very long beer ad here on the radio, but just a great ad, and it's a good consumer trend. You know, I was walking around D.C. yesterday and saw the Bud Light Seltzer promos everywhere. Like, they have them all in the stores. I think they timed that perfectly. You know, people are catching on. It's different trends, and, you know, consumers want to be healthier. They don't necessarily want to get smashed drunk, and they want good taste, and this is, you know, just another example of a company delivering. So that was a good ad. Let's see what else we got. We got one more, I guess, non-political ad. This one I liked. It will really only make sense, though, if you've been to Boston.
Yes. Oh, this is my favorite ad ever because it's – I mean, they're obviously throwing their voices a little bit. But for anyone who's, like, ever met anyone from, like, Dorchester or somewhere, like, really in Boston, the accent makes this commercial so good.
Then this is a commercial for Hyundai, so let's listen in.
Oh, look at this guy. Hey, Rachel, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
He's not getting that car in there.
No, sir.
Look at these two troublemakers.
Hey, Johnny, how are you?
Wicked car. Is that new? Wicked.
Yeah, it's a Sonata. Let me pack it.
Oh, you're not fitting your car in there.
Chris, stop being a smarty pants, all right? Look who's got Smart Pack.
Smart Pack?
Smart Pack.
Is that the clicker? Car packs itself.
It's smart.
It's wicked smart. And I can pack it anywhere.
How about Dorchester?
Packed it.
Foxborough?
Packed it.
The Garden?
Packed it.
Saugus?
Packed it.
Swampscott?
Revere?
The Harbor?
Are you kidding me? I packed it and then unpacked it.
You unpacked it?
Kid. Game changer.
That Sonata ain't got no driver.
That's all right. He's got Smart Pack.
Hey, you can pack there.
He's got Smart Pack.
Hey, whoa, it's Big Poppy.
Wicked smart.
This is a ghost car.
A better way to park. Only available on the all-new Sonata with remote smart parking.
Love
system.
It.
Sorry about that. I know. Did you guys know he lived there?
I had no idea.
So, yeah, that's obviously great for, hey, look, the new artificial intelligence in cars, Smart Pack. Yeah. Smart Pack. It's actually, it's great as well because these are like the top movie stars now. You got John Krasinski and what's his name, Chris Evans, Captain America. So you have Jim from The Office and
the cameo from Big Poppy from David Ortiz.
David, who
baseball
is this guy?
Baseball player. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. For the non-sports fans, he's probably one of the greatest Boston Red Sox of all time.
Okay. So, I don't know why they've wanted to feature Boston, but I don't know if you remember. Do you remember the Saturday Night Live sketch where it was Rachel Dratch, who was also in there, and Jimmy Fallon?
Yes.
So I thought Jimmy Fallon would make a cameo in this.
Oh, that would have been good.
Because that was the original shtick, is they would be like the super excited Boston Red Sox fans, and they were like, I love you, I love you, and just like the great Boston accent. So I don't know.
I think they went with Boston because that kind of over-exaggerated accent, I mean, the Super Bowl had just ended, and you could just hear people walking down. I was in Nashville. You hear people walking down Broadway in Nashville going, "Hey, got Smart Pack."
Smart Pack? Wow. That's
you
good.
Had somebody with a southern accent, very southern accent, Tennessee, trying to throw their voice to get the Boston accent to be like, "Hey, Johnny, we got Smart Pack."
That is good. You know, usually it's the northerners making fun of the southerners. So very happy to know the southerners are making fun of the Bostonites now. That's great.
Yes.
And it's a way that, I guess if you're into sports, it's a way that New England is injected into the game, even if they're not playing. The Patriots usually are, you know, the top winning team. They're always at the Super Bowl. And oddly enough, who do we see on the screen? Tom Brady.
Tom Brady.
They say all good things must come to an end. That the best just know when to walk away. So to my teammates, my family, and most of all, my fans, you deserve to hear this from me. Hulu doesn't just have live sports. According to the script they just gave me, Hulu also has your favorite cable channels plus the greatest shows, movies, and originals of all time.
All right, we'll have to play the whole thing. Kind of, I know they were teasing it a bit because it was a little on social media, like Tom Brady's important announcement to all his fans.
Well, yeah, the big question is he going to go back to New England? Is he going to sign somewhere else? Is he going to retire? So everyone thought it was this huge announcement and all these sports fans are tuning in. wondering, okay, he's gonna let us know. He's gonna tell us what he's doing. And then it turns into a Hulu ad. And the best part of the Hulu ad is that it's like completely apathetic Tom Brady, who's like, he's got this dramatic buildup, and then he's like, yeah, according to the script that they just gave me, Hulu is great.
According to the $5 million, they just paid me to be in this $5 million ad. Yeah, so that was good, and obviously another consumer innovation, you know, streaming service, yep. Hulu. I've actually never gotten Hulu because it doesn't work in Europe and other places. You always need a VPN. It's tough, but yeah. Hulu, there's a lot of series on there. You know, there's good stuff that's coming out, another great consumer innovation. Yep. Beautiful. So a lot of beautiful things to celebrate. You're listening to Consumer Choice Radio on the Big Talker FM 106.7. We've got I don't have any more funny ads, David. If people want to look at any others, they can go to consumerchoiceradio.com, and we do have good YouTube link. You can find many more of them. But we do have one from everyone's favorite New Yorker, Michael Bloomberg. So Michael Bloomberg is running for president. As if you didn't know, if you own a television in the United States, likely you've seen his mug on the TV. Yep. He's spent already, I think, something like $300 million, which is insane.
It's just a staggering amount of money for someone who hasn't actually qualified for the debates yet.
Oh, yeah, but don't worry. They're changing the rules, so he'll get in. But I think he had three different ads. I'm not sure how many. And I think it depends on the market and whatever, but here's one of them that's just, anti-Trump.
The real state of the union, a nation divided by an angry, out-of-control president, a White House beset by lies, chaos, and corruption, an administration that has failed the American people. It doesn't have to be this way. Next year, we can have a leader who brings people together, solves problems, and gets results. Mike Bloomberg will get it done.
All right, so obviously very trendy, hip app. You got Michael Bloomberg on there. This is the big tech billionaire guy, Bloomberg. Everyone knows his name. Everyone knows his face now. And essentially he is buying his way into the Democratic primary process. How fun.
Yeah, it's it's interesting to see. I mean, I think it's like $200 million already. The only person he's behind is Tom Steyer. To see him put a bunch of money out there. I mean, this ad, I don't know if I particularly liked his strategy because it was very like do work, like Mike's going to get it done.
Yeah, wearing a tie, rolling up his sleeves.
Yeah, and I mean, it's if we're talking like middle-class voters in whether it be North Carolina or Pennsylvania or Wisconsin or anywhere, it's hard to see Mike Bloomberg as like the guy who's going to be like putting the sandbags on the pile for hurricane relief or getting the shovels out or whatever politicians are supposed to do, that kind of mantra he's trying to build for himself. So I don't know if I really buy it. I also thought it was interesting that nothing in that ad was positive other than he'll get it done.
I think he had two more ads. One is just general Bloomberg. And the next one was just about guns, gun violence, and his plan for guns and everything he's done in New York and through all of his foundations to try to stop the, Second Amendment in some way. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of been the Bloomberg strategy. So there's a lot that comes from that. We'll hear a lot more from Bloomberg. I mean, specifically if you're looking at Super Tuesday, if we're looking at primaries in South Carolina, North Carolina, everything that's beginning of March. We're going to hear a lot more about Bloomberg. The problem with many of their candidates is they don't have money. Not a concern for him.
Yeah, not $200 million to dump into the campaign. And I mean, I think it was you who shared with me a funny article about like what it's like to work for Michael Bloomberg. Like staff have already spent $10,000 expensing sushi. They all have these new MacBook Airs and brand new iPhone 11 Pros. And
oh yeah, just join the campaign. You get all these fresh Apple products. You know, you get your Crocs come in the mail. You get sushi. Apparently, you can expense. It's crazy, but hey, he's got the money. And the whole funny thing about this, and this is, we're on day one right now. We just with the Super Bowl of the ultimate consumer entertainment week, and then we move to day two. And then we see what happened in Iowa with the Iowa caucus and the entire muck-up that happened there. I mean, this was insane. and has led a lot of people to be super skeptical about, you know, do you remember the last 2-3 years, all we've talked about in the United States has been about, you know, the integrity of our elections, and then the first contest that we get ends up in total failure.
And they blow it. And I mean, if you were writing a fictional story about the Democrats secretly wanting to lose again, this would be the perfect opening chapter.
Oh, yeah.
Because all the Republicans need to do, and all Trump needs to do, which he's done, is be like, ha, they can't even run an election. How are they going to run the country?
Yeah. That's perfect. It's like they can't build a website. They can't, you know, like Obama's exchange. They can't build a website, can't hold a caucus. Do you trust these guys to run your country?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, and now what we've really seen is the emergence of some serious infighting in the party.
Yeah.
And so I think the thought of, I mean, a lot of some people have maybe thrown the idea that there could be some sort of brokered convention. I think with this growing divide, it becomes more and more likely every day. So I think technically Mayor Pete has won based on the count. He's only won by 0.1 of a percent.
Yeah,
but technically he has won, and Bernie Sanders is a close second.
Well, let's listen to Bernie Sanders' take, because he's got a different take on it. I think this is actually just yesterday. So what are we? This is Saturday that we're putting this out here, and we still don't really have 100% of the results. They put him out at a percentage, said Mayor Pete was ahead. Then they said, oh, we're up to 80, and then they recanted. Who knows? So here's Bernie Sanders on his reaction.
Now, as everyone knows, the Iowa process is enormously complicated. In my view, it is far too complicated.
You don't say.
And one word, if I might, about the so-called state delegate equivalents, SDEs, that the cable news and political pundits have spent so much time pontificating about. Because of changes to Democratic Party rules that were widely supported during the Democratic Unity Reform Commission, these state delegate equivalents have greatly diminished importance from past caucuses, and they should. In the past, a candidate with more delegates to the state and county conventions could actually change the number of national delegates, delegates who go to the national convention, from that allocated on caucus night. That is no longer the case. As it stands right now, to the best of my knowledge, either I or Mr. Buttigieg will end with a tiny fraction of an advantage in the SDEs.
Now, it gets a bit convoluted, but terrible acronym. Because all I heard was STDs. So apparently Bernie Sanders and Buttigieg and all these guys went to Iowa, and all they got were a couple of STDs.
And it just seems so, like, yes, the process is convoluted, but it reminds me of Democrats whining about the Electoral College, which is entirely it's selective criticism, because at some points they're all for it because it works for them, and then at others they want California to basically take the whole country. So when Bernie is complaining and others have complained about the process, it's like, well, I mean, guys, these are the rules. Like, yeah, I mean, it's not one vote, one person, simple kind of direct voting. It's complicated. But they all went to Iowa knowing that. And so it's always interesting to see them bemoan the rules after the fact, after they just spent who knows how many months in Iowa doing everything they're supposed to do.
And it's a total microcosm. You know, this is it's the whole thing of using delegates. And really what messed this up is there's this app created by this group, I don't know, Shadow Inc. or something like this.
And what a terrible name.
Terrible name, of course. apparently, because of the new process, they have three numbers that they need to get from every caucus precinct. So it's like the percentage, the number of people who are actually in the camps, and then like an overall. It just gets messy and complicated. Probably the caucus system will probably not work and will go out of fashion, and maybe they'll put in a primary. I don't know. But either way, very bad for Democrats and the Democratic ideas that, you know, have been in the mainstream media now for, I guess, the last year and a half. We've had a lot of debates and talked about all the big ideas of Democrats and, you know, the process breaking down for them. Doesn't look good. Doesn't look good.
Yeah,
not good PR.
And one of the some of the good analysis that comes out on this is the impact it has on fundraising. So traditionally, in the past, when we've had a clear-cut winner of Iowa, that's basically catapulted whoever that winner was up the line in terms of fundraising, in terms of national media interest. So for the Dems, this hiccup basically tramples all over whoever was going to get that momentum because, yeah. I mean, Mayor Pete certainly shocked a lot of people by let's say, winning by a very, very fine margin. But by no means is it anything definitive. And so there's a real hiccup in what is usually done in terms of getting out additional supporters and showing donors that you're the real deal. It just makes it look like this is going to be a mess all the way through.
So let's listen to the chair of the Democratic National Committee. This is Tom Perez. He was interviewed on Rachel Maddow's show talking about the debacle, what it means for Democrats.
You know, what happened in Iowa was unacceptable, and the party chair has acknowledged that. He's apologized for that, and we've worked together over the last few days to fix the challenges. And I'm very relieved that we now have 90% or 100% reported. At the same time,
do we?
There have been reports, and we've seen in the tabulation process that there were some questions raised. There was an example of a precinct in Black Hawk County where I think 83 state delegate equivalents were apportioned to Deval Patrick, which was a clear error. And so we all care. We have a shared interest in making sure we have accuracy.
Mm-hmm. And accuracy. Now, I think if I was a Democratic voter, people who, you know, I was all in on this, if I'm a Bernie supporter, I just see this as yet another way that they're trying to cut him down. I mean, how is that not the conclusion out of all of this?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and anyone who's on Twitter has certainly seen the Bernie bots out there claiming that this is some grand conspiracy, that there's a link between the Shadow Inc. group and Buttigieg's campaign, and it's all convoluted because it's a coordinated effort to try and make sure that Bernie doesn't win. And I mean, I don't think that that's the case, but it certainly could appear that way. And that being said, we also do know very much so that the Democratic Party establishment does not want Bernie Sanders to win. I mean, I think it was just a few days ago, Hillary Clinton was, I think she was on Ellen, and she basically spent the entire time saying, don't vote for Bernie. He's crazy. He can't win. We actually have to focus on beating Trump, one, and we have to focus on ideas that are manageable.
So, yeah, so CNN came out against Bernie with the Elizabeth Warren question, sexism.
Yep.
Now you've got the whole Iowa caucus thing. Yeah, it doesn't look good for Bernie.
No.
You know, we'll keep covering this. You'll hear about it here on Consumer Choice Radio, here on the Big Talker FM, listening to us live Saturdays here at 10 o'clock. And since, you know, we covered day two of the great Ultimate Consumer Entertainment Week, David, we move on to the next spectacle.
Woo!
Yes. Yes, the next spectacle, big spectacle. The nation was gathered around television sets to hear President Trump give his State of the Union address. And what were the people chanting in the galley? What were they chanting once Trump was able to come together? Four more years.
Four more years.
Four more years. So the State of the Union address happened. Again, this is just like another day in the Ultimate Consumer Entertainment Week. And President Trump gets up before the microphone, gives an hour and a half speech, giving the State of the Union of the country. I've got my first take, but David, I'll let you go. Were you able to watch it? Did you see some clips? What did you think?
Yeah, so I got my wife to actually sit down and begrudgingly watch the entire thing, which is quite an accomplishment.
Probably had a couple seltzers on the table for that one.
Yes. Yes, I did watch the whole thing. Generally speaking, I actually enjoyed his State of the Union.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, I thought actually it was whoever wrote it did a very good job. Trump did a very good job of staying on point. It had a very 1992 Bill Clinton, it's the economy, stupid feel to it, where the first, I don't know, half or even longer maybe, was focused on all of the macroeconomic indicators, where he's just rifling off stats about unemployment, about African-American unemployment, about job growth, about wage growth. And I think from anyone else, that would have come across as very policy wonky.
Yeah.
I think if I had gotten up there and given that same speech, people would have fallen asleep. But the combination of kind of his bravado or arrogance, whether you were a pro or against Trump, carried it. And I think that it probably sells very well in the states that Trump needs to carry, like Michigan, like Wisconsin, like Pennsylvania and Florida. So I think that sells well. I think he in terms of that perspective, outside of the fact checking and all of that jazz and some of the reality TV show aspects that happened a little later on in the State of the Union, I think it was pretty good.
I think I was watching this. I had downloaded it, and I, you know, obviously was not able to watch it at the time, but I was able to watch it. Some clips, saw a little bit on the plane. I had to ask the flight attendant for additional napkins to wipe my tears. I was so teary-eyed. It's so emotional. These stories of individuals, and that's what Trump did perfectly. You know, the stories of individuals that have been helped by particular policies. There's the little girl who was able to get the opportunity scholarship so she could go to the private school of her choice. You had the little boy who wants to be part of the Space Force and his great-grandfather who was a Tuskegee Airman. Oh, my goodness. I was crying the entire time. I think it worked really well. You know, most presidents have done this. You know, they have a personal story and they call out people in the audience. But this one, for some reason, tugged on my heartstrings. Goodness, I'm not even an emotional guy, but I felt like I was watching This Is Us, you know, season two.
I mean, and some people chastise those as like reality TV moments when the soldier came home and the wife didn't know and things like that. I thought it was particularly good in terms of being something beyond, like hitting people in the feels, in their emotions.
Oh yeah, and isn't exactly what we want? Isn't reality TV exactly what I mean? They always make the joke, more people vote for American Idol or Dancing with the Stars or whatever more than actually vote in elections. You know, people have talked about that for a long time. And I tell you, that tugged on the heartstrings. But it wasn't just about emotion. There were some great one-liners. Here's my favorite from the entire speech.
Socialism destroys nations, but always remember freedom unifies the soul.
Freedom unifies the soul. I mean, there are some great one-liners. And I think everything I would say was pretty positive. You know, you had impeachment looming, you had the Senate vote, and Trump had this great section on healthcare. It's something that we've talked about a lot before, and socialism. Let's listen to this.
But as we work to improve Americans' healthcare, there are those who want to take away your healthcare, take away your doctor, and abolish private insurance entirely. 132 lawmakers in this room have endorsed legislation to impose a socialist takeover of our health care system, wiping out the private health insurance plans of 180 million very happy Americans. To those watching at home tonight, I want you to know we will never let socialism destroy American health care.
Yeah, it's a lot of clapping.
That's some good red meat right there.
That's very good. And, you know, this is, you obviously had many of the congressional Democrats, female members that were dressed in all white, the suffragettes, as kind of giving an homage. And, you know, for this and many other parts, they were seated, you know, just did not stand, did not clap.
Well, that was the big thing for me is it was, so I'm always interested to see, okay, what gets everybody off their feet? Because usually there's like, I mean, Obama talking about killing Osama bin Laden in his State of the Union, whatever year that was, everybody's on their feet. That's good. I was always looking to see, okay, well, what were Democrats on their feet for? The one that really struck me is when he started talking about Maduro and Venezuela and how he's a violent dictator. And he points out the gentleman
Juan Guaido.
Yes, exactly, in the room. And, I mean, Nancy Pelosi is on her feet. A couple of the big, more centrist Democrats are on their feet. But then there are several who are not and who are almost like sitting in protest.
Yeah.
And I know that if you really despise Trump, it may be hard to give him credit where it's due. But come on, guys. I mean, we're talking about a country that is so ravaged by a corrupt and evil government that people are breaking into zoos to eat the animals or eating their pets. Yeah. Widespread famine. I mean, this is something. This is that he is a dictator. We should all celebrate when his demise comes. And so to see some Democrats basically be too set in their ways to even acknowledge that was a little concerning for me. The same thing with things like the opportunity grant for that child. How is that not something we're celebrating? I mean, she gets to go. And I know that school choice is something that very much divides Republicans and Democrats. But, I mean, the story is so heartwarming, And you see the reaction on her face. And yet people are still kind of crossing their arms and sitting there begrudgingly. And
One exception to that is she's a U.S. senator from Arizona.
This is
Kristen Sinema.
Yep.
She clapped at many instances. One of them was talking about opportunity zones that was put together by South Carolina Senator Tim Scott. And that is the idea of kind of adding economic incentives for investing in particular areas that are, let's say, low income or have been gentrified. She was very excited about that, clapping her hands. There were many times where she was kind of the lone Democrat who was standing up and clapping. I looked into her history a little bit. She's a, former political activist, used to be part of the Green Party, apparently openly bisexual, first openly bisexual person elected to Congress. Yep. She's someone who has been an activist, and she's kind of become a bit more conservative. And I don't know if that's because of Arizona or how ideas just change over time. But yeah, she was one person standing up and clapping, and she was one of the only ones on the Democratic side sometimes. So good to see. These are principled people. I think we need more of that. So for the State of the Union, this is a beautiful show. People got their kind of entertainment at the end as well with Nancy Pelosi ripping up the copy. We don't have to talk about that much more.
I want to say one thing about that, because there's a congressman, I think he's a congressman, and now he's threatening to sue Nancy Pelosi for ripping up federal documents.
This was a meme on Twitter. It's like, she actually broke the law. It's like,
guys. relax. I mean, it could be a cheap political stunt, but let's cool our jets here, and let's not, like, matching pettiness with an exponentially higher level of pettiness is not the answer.
Yeah, just let it speak for itself.
So
yeah, there's a lot there. A lot of great meat in the speech. There's a little bit on healthcare as well, a lot on the economy, a lot on what has been happening with job and unemployment numbers. I mean, it is incredible. And That was just one more day in the Ultimate Consumer Entertainment Week. There's much more. You're listening to Consumer Choice Radio here on the Big Talker FM. What are some other ones here that we have for the week? So you have that, State of the Union. Next day, we get the Senate voting on Trump's impeachment and basically seeing if he's going to be ripped out of office. It does not happen. There's no majority. There's only one Republican senator who does vote with the motion. That is Mitt Romney. Who is usually no fan of the stuff that we like vaping and specifically alcohol modernization. Yeah. So plenty we can say about that. But, just another day and another week. And, it goes on and on. It's been a crazy, crazy couple of days. I think it's going to take a couple of weeks for people to just get a breather from everything that happened.
And I think what will be interesting to see is after this next election, when we look back and we analyze, okay, well, what did this mean in the context of how people actually ended up voting? Did this whole impeachment process help or did it hurt the president? I think that the numbers suggest that where it counts for him in the states that he needs to win, it's probably helping. Which is, again, I mean, talk about unforced errors from the Democrats. And I think it was David Axelrod, who I have an incredible amount of respect for, although we'd probably be on different sides of the aisle politically, was basically like, yeah, I mean, this can move forward, but it's not, everybody knows it's not going to go anywhere. So we should really just focus on beating Trump at the election. Our efforts are much better spent there. And I mean, to hear someone who's been as influential as he has basically say, guys, like, yeah, we can proceed with this, but you got to know it's not going to go anywhere. You're not going to get the votes. Let's figure out how we can win. So he says that, and then Iowa happens. So it's not looking good for the Dems right now.
No. And you know, apart from that, there is a lot of positive news. You know, David and I are just kind of summing up the news of the week, but, you know, there's stuff that's happening on all corners of the earth that I think are pretty important for consumer choice. That's what we talk about here. So you know, this is a program produced by the Consumer Choice Center. We've got a great number of colleagues who are around the world, and we do have some great media hits and some successes to share. Popping over here to the website, we've got some great articles on the necessity of pesticides against invasive species by our colleague Bill Wietz. We've got some great articles by our colleague Fred Rode on the coronavirus. We can get into that a little bit later. And the response by the World Health Organization, which has been terrible. We've got also some great media hits on gene editing. We were very happy to announce that we put out the Gene Editing Index, so you can see where your country ranks on the list. And then one great article that I just love, and this is a broader topic about the term is flagskam, flight shaming. This comes from Swedish, and there's an article by our colleague Bill Wietz again in 1828, Flight Shaming Won't Save the Planet. Yeah. And I wanted to talk about this one specifically because there was an article by Vice that, it actually kind of hurt my heart a little bit. It says here, this is the headline of the Vice article, your frequent flyer status is part of the problem. If you take six or more flights a year, you're part of an elite class of people whose behavior needs to change. So this is all about people who are flying around. You are actually the cause of all global warming, climate change. It's your fault. You should feel guilty. What are you doing flying around? How dare you do this to the rest of us?
Yeah. And I mean, it's such a shame because I mean, I still get whenever I fly, I mean, and you and I both fly a lot, certainly more than six times a year. Whenever I fly, I still kind of get nostalgic about the fact that I can travel across the Atlantic in 7 hours while being on the internet, eating a cooked meal, and be in some other beautiful place in the world and be able to explore that and just the interconnectedness of people in that way. I certainly understand where they're coming at in terms of emissions, but I mean, the aviation industry has been on the forefront of fuel efficiency, and we've identified or pointed that out in many instances, that is one industry that is every day getting exponentially more fuel efficient, bringing down those emissions per capita or per passenger. And so, yeah, it is a shame to see people go after flying when, for a lot of people, yourself included, myself included, flying means seeing your family. It means enjoying a vacation every once in a while.
It means doing work, spreading liberty, trying to change the world. I mean,
yes,
you'd think Greenpeace is not on planes trying to go to different areas and talk about environmentalism. Of course they are. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
The best. This is related. I forgot about this. Did you see the clip of Elizabeth Warren getting off of her private plane?
Oh, that was gold. And she realized somebody had a camera and she kind of ducked behind one of her political aides. Oh, that was just gold. Here we have the
delicious
the queen of progressive politics who rambles on about people who have means and who have wealth and millionaires and billionaires and all of that jazz. Here she is strutting off a private jet, and then realizing she's on camera and trying to hide so nobody sees her.
I mean, how do people think she's getting between New Hampshire, D.C., Iowa, you know, all within, and look, you know, we might fly a lot, David, but, you know, we don't have a private jet picking us up to whisk us off to these locations within, you know, a minute's notice. Delicious to see this video. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it would be great to see someone try to map out their flight route and be like, okay, how do I get from Rapid City to Billings this afternoon for an event tonight? It's like, oh, sorry, like, you're going to have to connect in Denver, and then you're going to have to connect in Casper, then you're going to have to connect somewhere else. Like, it just doesn't exist. And so obviously they're making use of private jets and whatnot. And so it's just so rich to
just admit it, you know? And let's say you could even make the very progressive argument is like, well, I'm on the jet because I need to go spread this progressive message. You know, I need to talk about why we need higher taxes on the rich, you know, and I need the jet to do that. Well, almost like now we sound like the preacher who told his congregation he needed the plane because God, you know, needed him to. Right, that's another point. So another, I guess, a big win for our colleagues in Brazil. Now, this is huge. You have to imagine, you know, what's it like to have Netflix, to have Amazon Prime? Everybody can get this pretty instantaneously. But there are many laws in many countries, including Canada, about content, about what you're allowed to have, who's allowed to put out any kind of streaming services, who's able to put out shows and such. And there's a huge win by our colleagues in Brazil. They have been fighting basically the telco regulator, telling them that they should allow any of these foreign-owned, you know, streaming companies to just be legal, just allow them to compete with any of the kind of domestic traditional companies. They were able to do it, and they just came out with the ruling, and basically we won. Consumer Choice Center was able to win and do a really good job. This is a huge win for our colleagues, so definitely a lot of props to André Freio, who's on our team, to Ivanildo, to Andrea, just great team, Bia as well. Really happy to see this in Brazil, and hopefully we'll probably try to get André on the show here soon to talk about really what this means, because there's so much coming out of that.
And it's crazy when I talk to people here in Canada or the United States, and they'll be like, okay, so what do you guys do? What big wins do you have? And I'll explain something as simple like, oh, well, we worked to legalize Netflix and other streaming providers in Brazil. And people will be like, oh, wait, they weren't legal? Well, no, there's old, outdated regs that actually stop them from really being able to operate. And immediately everyone's like, oh, well, that's awesome. I mean, these are, like you said, privileges that that we get to enjoy that we probably take for granted. So, I mean, it is a great day that Brazilian consumers are going to have access to all of these streaming services, all of the content that goes along with that. Which will be both domestic and foreign. We're also talking about more platforms for people who care about local culture and language and things like that. It also provides a means for the dissemination of good local programming or good national programming in terms of shows that are in Portuguese, that are Brazilian focused. So it's just a win-win for everyone. It's more consumer choice across the board. And I'm certainly very proud of what our colleagues were able to accomplish.
There you go. We're very excited. Everybody's clapping for you guys. Great job.
Yes.
Those of you in Brazil, so congratulations. So that's part of the efforts of the Consumer Choice Center. This is Consumer Choice Radio here on the Big Talker FM. We've got a couple other stories. 4 more years. Okay. This is another. We got another couple of stories here. Dave, there's a lot of stuff that we had to catch up on, you know, the last few weeks. We've talked a lot about the coronavirus, talked about ride sharing. I wanted to talk about something else that I think is, I don't know, it's in the realm of travel. It's in the realm of what's happening with certainly the environment and flight shaming. And now there's a new kind of ruling that just came out, and this is the battle between the U.S. federal government and the state of New York. So this has to do with the enrollment of people into Global Entry. So any of you who have, you know, this TSA pre-check or whatever, usually you go to the airport and you just do like a little exam and somebody talks to you, do an interview, and then you get Global Entry. You get this kind of status that allows you to just hit up the security line that's a bit faster. So it was actually just announced this week, I think it was on Thursday, that the Department of Homeland Security suspended allowing New Yorkers to enroll in this because of sanctuary city policies. So essentially, if you're a flyer, if you're willing to pay a bit more so you don't have to put up with the ridiculous security because you have to travel for work or to go see your family, now if you're a New Yorker, you will not be able to do that because of, I guess, the laws that you're state politicians have enacted. It's kind of crazy. It's another way that we're kind of penalizing the little people, you know, people like you and me, people like average everyday travelers who are listeners to this program. It's kind of outrageous.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of silly when you consider that in order to get global entry, you have to go through the interview process and provide all sorts of information to qualify.
Yeah.
So it's not like, let's say you had an undocumented immigrant in the state of New York or in New York City, they're not going to be able to get global entry.
They can't even get on a plane because you need a legal ID, right?
Exactly. So it just seems to be a bit of a petty move.
Yeah. It's just another way to hurt the people, the individuals.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know if this will backfire on the administration, but this is definitely something that doesn't help everyday people, doesn't help consumers, and it's just going to be more of a headache for people who are already being shamed for trying to fly to go see their family.
Exactly, and it's now bringing those people into the immigration conversation, which are completely separate. I mean, you can be for more immigration, you can be against more immigration, but I think everyone can realize that stopping New Yorkers from being able to qualify for global entry isn't going to do anything to
solve. If we're going to weaponize the federal government, you know, let's start talking about restrictions because of North Carolina's alcohol laws. Let's talk about, you know, different kind of restrictions like that. Let's talk about Michigan that banned vaping. You know, what's your policy now, federal government? If we want to get in that tit for tat mode, institutional strong arming, usually the little people lose. So I'm not a big fan of that. No, we'll see what happens with that. So. Very interesting. Other things that we got here. You want to talk about Tesla?
Yeah. Tesla is certainly an interesting case study here because the stock has, I think the numbers are, it's jumped 200% in half a year.
Yeah,
it's been huge. It's an interesting company because it is very much part of the environmental discussion. So that is certainly interesting. There are questions about subsidies. Which is problematic from my point of view in terms of subsidizing people to buy these cars, and we can get into that. But generally speaking, I think the projection of Tesla, and obviously Elon Musk being the character that he is definitely an interesting subject and topic in terms of where the future of electric cars is.
Let's listen to this is a short clip by Wall Street Journal. They do a little analysis on Tesla and Elon Musk and everything that's happened with the company over the last couple years.
Was Tesla going to be able to survive long enough for Elon Musk to deliver this vision?
Less than a year ago, things looked bleak for Tesla when shares dropped below $200. But in just 7 short months, CEO Elon Musk has turned the company into the most valuable U.S. automaker of all time.
Wow.
So how did the embattled founder get back to delivering the impossible for his shareholders?
2017 and 2018 were largely a trip through hell for Elon Musk and Tesla. Things didn't work out as planned.
Boring bonehead questions are not cool. Next.
There's tobacco and marijuana in there. That's all it is.
That's him smoking weed on the Joe Rogan show.
Yeah.
Filed securities fraud charges against Elon Musk stemming from his August 7th, 2018 statements that he was considering taking Tesla private.
These image problems for Musk were compounded by production issues for Tesla. Model 3 deliveries were delayed, and the promised $35,000 price tag was never met.
He had very ambitious targets to build the Model 3 compact car in California, and it turned out way harder than he expected, in part because of Elon Musk's vision for automation. He talked about an idea of being able to turn the lights off and let the robots do their work. Well, the plan and the vision turned out to be much more complicated than anyone anticipated, or at least he anticipated.
Then, on day one of 2019, U.S. customers were hit with an effective price increase to buy any Tesla. The federal tax credit for electric vehicles was cut in half as part of a planned year-long phase-out.
The company announced it was lowering the vehicle's price because it was essentially trying to counteract that effective price increase. Some took that as a sign that Tesla perhaps had peaked at the number of customers in the U.S. willing or able to afford that higher-priced Model 3.
A week later, Tesla started construction of a new factory in China, the country's first entirely foreign-owned car plant without any local partners.
China's the world's largest.
So there's so much to unpack in that. The last point, I actually did not know that Tesla set up a factory in China, but that is, I believe, only engineers from Tesla. I don't think they have many nationals involved. I don't know how they got how that happened, yeah. How the Chinese communists allowed that to happen. But, you know, the other things is for how Tesla has been able to just bounce back. I mean,
yep.
The Tesla model of delivery of vehicles, of ordering cars, it's so easy. I'm actually just on Tesla.com right now.
Yep.
Model 3. Add to cart. What do I want? What color do I want my wheels? Do I want the performance car? Do I want the nice leather interior? And then yep. I hit add to cart. I can pay with my card now, and I can pick it up or have to. I mean, it is insane how consumer friendly buying one of these is. It's,
oh, yeah.
It's crazy. I think that's exactly what people are probably catching on to. You obviously have the environmental factor. People love electric
yep.
cars. Many yep. people see them as the future. This is crazy. Obviously, there's a lot of other things to come with. They talked about the subsidies and
yeah.
the actual cost. So there's a lot in there. But you know, you still gotta give it to Musk for making now the most, I don't know if it's profitable or biggest American auto manufacturer in the world. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, and it's incredible. I mean, the good thing here, so a lot of people are in favor of these subsidies because they want more people to buy these electric vehicles. And I can understand the argument, but the problem is that these vehicles are, generally speaking, fairly highly priced. We're talking $35,000, $45,000, $65,000, $85,000 cars. So when we have subsidies for these vehicles, we're largely just giving subsidies to wealthy people, mm-hmm. Which probably irritates most people listening, because if you're going to get a subsidy, most people can agree that it should be means tested
yeah.
and subsidies should go to the people who have the least among us. So I'm all for getting rid of these subsidies, and it could provide a very nice case study of how a lot of these environmentally focused firms, whether they're Tesla or others, can actually survive without the subsidies. So yeah. it'll be interesting to see how things continue down the road, how the cars are actually embraced into the North American model, because obviously we drive a lot. So where the charging stations are, another big question is what is powering the charging stations? Is it hooked up to a coal, a grid that is fed off of coal energy
yeah.
or the burning of coal? That certainly changes things. Is it nuclear?
Yeah.
That would change things.
I still think as a consumer, though, I don't have a Tesla car. This is not a Tesla ad, but
no.
the process is so streamlined, and there are a lot of regulations that play against Tesla. You know, a lot of the used car salesmen have, you know, for a long time lobbied a lot of the states that don't allow people to be able to sell cars if they don't have physical locations and lots.
Yeah, I think it was New Jersey that basically created a law. I could be wrong on the particular state, but basically
all of them. It's a good amount.
Yeah, they created legislation that said, okay, you can only sell cars through dealerships, which, I mean, is an incredible amount of overhead, which really isn't required anymore. I mean, as we alluded to earlier on in one of our episodes, like, we want Prime now.
I want Prime now.
Yeah, I want Prime now.
I want Tesla now.
Yes.
That's true. So, yeah, some good stuff from Tesla. Great company, I think. Interesting stuff from the consumer perspective. We got much more coming your way in the next couple of weeks. Keep on listening to Consumer Choice Radio. We are live on the program every Saturday at 10 a.m. on the Big Talker FM 106.7 out of Wilmington, North Carolina. You can subscribe to the podcast version that goes out afterwards on consumerchoiceradio.com. Find us on Spotify, in the iTunes Store, Overcast, wherever you get your podcast. Much more to come. Great wins from the Consumer Choice Center to focus on. David, it's been a pleasure, my man. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
Yeah, until next week. Talk to you soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening.